just a baby. Before I could speak, I would line up all my letter blocks alphabetically. Now it's my vocation and my passion to assign every decimal numbered shelf to every decimal numbered spine. I'm
Good morning and welcome to the Library Show for Sunday, April 17th. My name is Brooke Schaefer and I'm your host today. And I'm here with one of my fellow co-hosts, Carrie Sagal is in the studio with me today. And we've invited in two other guests, Tina Johnson and Don Muller. And all of us are gathered here today because April is National Poetry Month. And these are people that are avid poetry readers and some write poetry. All of us read it and we're here to celebrate poetry and our love of poetry. And so that's why we're all in the studio today. So we've got lots to talk about because we do love poetry so much. But I am kind of curious. I'm just going to start with you, Tina. I'm curious as to what got you started in poetry and reading poetry. Like when did you begin reading poetry? Maybe what was your first book or what turned you on to it?
Well, my earliest recollections of that, I was trying to think about it today, are I think when I was in junior high school and being in an English class, and I just remember some of the poems that were introduced to me there and how wonderful I thought they were, and I've kind of held on to them throughout the years and just kind of come back to poetry a number of times in my life, and then probably within the last 10 years have really been doing a lot of reading of poetry and really appreciating it.
And at some point you crossed over to writing poetry as well. Was that, when did that happen?
Well, I think that actually I kind of started dabbling a little bit in junior high school as well, okay, about the same time I was taken by poetry.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to spend too much time talking about your biography, but because we have so much poetry to talk about, but I am curious if you recall any of the poems that you heard in junior high that kind of turned you on to poetry.
I remember specifically The Death of the Ball Turret Gunner.
Whoa, who wrote that?
And I can't remember the poet. Can you remember that?
Anyone?
No, but I know the poem you're talking
yes,
about.
Yes, very short poem, but it just kind of knocked my socks off when I read it, and I just thought it was such a good poem. And the teacher who taught it did a really good job of explaining it because not all of it was readily accessible. But that one, and then another one, Those Winter Sundays by Robert Hayden. Oh.
I remember that poem, too, actually. That probably was one of the poems for me that turned me onto poetry, I suppose.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good poem. That's a beautiful poem. Maybe we'll have time to hear it later. I'm not sure. I'm going to move quickly over to Don Muller. Thanks for coming in, Don. You're an avid poetry reader. I don't know when you started reading poetry either. What turned you onto it?
Well, I think a class in college is what opened my eyes to poetry, but an experience I had in Sitka was the most powerful short period of time that I've had with a poem ever. And you want me to tell you?
Yeah.
Well, it was in
it's a cliffhanger.
It was in the late 70s, before Raven Radio. And to get any kind of good radio, we would listen at night. And late at night, we could pick up Canadian stations. And one night, I was kind of half asleep, and you know how you are when you're half asleep, half awake. And this station in Vancouver was playing a Mozart something. And the announcer started reading The Lake Isle of Innisfree. And I was literally transported to Ireland or wherever that is.
Yeah.
And so for a few short minutes, it was just out of this world.
Gone. Mm-hmm. You're gone across the ocean. do you think it was the way the person read it, or do you think it's the poem?
It's the poem. It's, you know, it's an accessible poem. It's the kind of thing that if you're half asleep and half awake, it would be easy to kind of slip into, which I did.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure we have another story about that particular poem, and I feel like we maybe should hear that poem as well. I don't know. Should we listen to it first, Carrie, or
Why don't you read it for us? Here you go. Yeah, Take this copy.
Okay, this is by Yeats. I'm not sure when it was written. Lake Isle of Innisfree. I will arise and go now and go to Innisfree in a small cabin build there of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honeybee, and live alone in the bee loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the veils of the morning to where the cricket sings. And there midnight's all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening full of the linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always night and day I hear lake water lapping with low sounds by the shore. While I stand on the roadway or on the pavements gray, I hear it in the deep heart's core.
Yeah, that's a I can see how that poem would transport you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the rhythm of the poem. I don't know. Is it iambic pentameter? My guess is it is, but I feel like there's definitely, he's got some serious work going on with his syllables and his emphasis on syllables. The way you speak it, it puts you kind of into a little meditative trance.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Don and I share an experience about these poems. I was traveling in Ireland with a friend, and we were driving around. I was driving on the wrong side of the road, and up ahead was this castle, Park Castle. And I grew up somewhere where there were castles, so I'm always like, castle, schmassle. But we pull up, and there's maybe a catamaran or something on this fairly large lake, and they're about to leave. And so we dash down, pay our fee, and hop on this boat. And we are astonished when we enter the boat that it's stem to stern filled with nuns. And the head nun in the front looks at me and thinks she knows me. And as soon as I speak American English, she realizes that she maybe just mistook me for another fairish-haired, large person that she knew. And we have a seat at the back behind all the nuns. And we start on our boat trip. And it was a folklore and poetry tour of Loch Gill, Loch being the word for lake. And these nuns were very enamored of Yeats, and the tour operator, who was the captain of the boat, would start reciting poetry, and all together, every single one of them would know the poem. So I was delighted. I was already transported. We passed this island, and the tour operator says, "And look over here, Innisfree." And that was a poem that I had known from a young child and had memorized. And my heart just like pitter-pattered. And as soon as he said Innisfree, all the nuns started reading this poem. And I had a little bit of it memorized, so I kind of joined in a little bit. And there was tea and biscuits. It was, if I think of my many travel experiences, it was one of the highlights of my whole life was that poetry boat ride with the nuns.
I love to think of that, going on the water, surrounded by nuns, reciting the Lake Isle of Innisfree.
Yes, up to that point, I always thought it was the Lake Isle of Innisfree, and then I know now that it's the Lake Isle of Innisfree. Mm. So that was really quite special.
So what got you started in reading poetry, Carrie?
Seventh grade, we had a poetry unit, which can often be the death of poetry for any young person. But I started reading poetry, and probably that poem being one of the poems that I met very early. We had to memorize a poem. I do not know why our teacher chose for us Robert Service, The Cremation of Sam McGee. But that is a poem that I memorized in seventh grade. And here I'm going to read just the first stanza, sort of a refrain. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that could make your blood run cold. The northern lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake LaBarge I cremated Sam McGee. And I was a bit of an overachiever, so memorizing one poem wasn't good enough, I had to memorize a second Robert service, which was the shooting of Dan McGrew. But I memorized that very quickly. While some parts of this poem still remain with me, I don't remember anything about the shooting of Dan McGrew.
It sounds like you're a memorizer of poems, and I would say actually that both of my other guests are memorizers of poems. I've heard both Tina and Don recite poems, and I guess I'm curious, gosh, how did that start? Why the heck would you do that?
I actually just most recently started memorizing poetry, and I guess I've always remembered the tales of prisoners of war talking about being incarcerated, and they would bring up the things that they had memorized earlier in their life. And I thought, you know, it would be neat to have kind of a block of a poetry that I've memorized. So I started doing that, and it's pretty slow going for me. I'm not a very good memorizer like you, Carrie.
But no, I'm not good at all.
The neat thing about it is that, you know, sometimes I will get into kind of a worry frame of mind, and I'll then just stop and recite a poem that I've memorized, and it takes me out of that, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. How about you, Don, since we're talking about memorizing poems? When did you get started
with
that?
I think, as I've said before, I tend to memorize poems because it allows me to avoid thinking deeply about those poems. But it's fun, like Tina says, it's fun to do that. And, you know, the time I like best to do it, either learning or either memorizing or reciting, is walking. Mm-hmm. And just kind of continued on and off over the years.
I feel like you bring up a point that we should address right away as poetry lovers, and that has kind of been in the periphery when, like, Tina mentioned that she kind of got turned on to poetry in junior high, and same with Carrie. Like, most people hate poetry. Most people go to school and are fed something, have to memorize a poem, and just hate it. And so I think that it's pretty wonderful that we all love poetry, and I think that what you said, Don, about having not to think deeply about poetry speaks to that there are many ways to enjoy poetry. And I think that some of the things we talk about today will hopefully turn some other people onto poetry as well. So on that note, who has a book that they would like to talk about first? Just leave it wide open. Who wants to just jump in?
Well, can I tell you about a poem that I brought?
Yes.
And I only brought it because part of what interests me about poetry is the story of the poets themselves, because they were a pretty crazy bunch. They are a pretty crazy bunch. They commit suicide frequently. They have wild lives. They just are off doing amazing things. They join foreign armies and serve. So if you read about their lives, it's very interesting. And I heard this story about this poet called Miklós Radnóti. And he was a Hungarian Jew, and the war broke out. And under the Nazis, he was conscripted into a labor detail and worked on the Ukrainian border, maybe disassembling bombs that hadn't exploded. Well, the war starts to fail for the Nazis, and they retreat from the Ukrainian border, and he's on a forced march. And he spends part of his time in a work camp, but then there's this forced march, and he's not doing very well. A guard beats him up one day because he gets irritated because he's always scribbling and writing his poetry. And there comes a time when the march isn't even going well for the Nazis, and they line up 21 or 22 Hungarian Jews, and they shoot them and bury them in a ditch. And after the war, the bodies were exhumed, and in his pocket, Miklos's pocket, were the poetry that he wrote. And this is a poem he wrote 2 or 3 days before his own death, upon having witnessed the death of one of his friends by execution. And he wrote this poem called Postcard Number 4. I fell next to him. His body rolled over. It was tight as a string before it snaps. Shot in the back of the head. This is how you'll end. Just lie quietly, I said to myself. Patience flowers into death now. Der springt noch auf, I heard above me. Dark, filthy blood was drying on my ear. And that bit of Russian means he's still standing up. And he basically wrote about his own death 2 or 3 days before he was executed. There were instructions with the poems, who to deliver the poems to, and then they were published by his friends and his wife. And it's just an amazing story that a Holocaust poet wrote this poem about his own death and that it was retrieved out of a mass grave.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of those interesting stories.
I love about that poem the word, the use of the word flowers. Yeah, a little bit of hope, I guess, in a very tragic poem. Yeah, that's a beautiful poem. And yeah, very sad.
So this is compiled in a book called Milky Sky, something like Milky Sky.
Is it a collection of
his poetry?
Just his poetry. Okay.
And his poetry probably from this period when he was a prisoner. In a work detail.
That sounds fascinating. That sounds like a wonderful book. Yeah,
yes.
We should look for. Does anyone else have a poem to follow? It's kind of hard to follow up that one, but maybe a different vein.
If you wanted to change the mood.
Sure.
Totally.
Okay.
Two poets that I've been really taken with are Matthew and Michael Dickman. And I think you introduced me to Matthew Dickman, Brooke.
Yeah, I really like him.
They're twin brothers who live in Portland, and they're both, like, really very good poets. So I don't know. I did bring Matthew Dickman's Slow Dance, but it's kind of long. I don't know if you want to read it.
I love that poem. You should read it.
and the reason that I wanted to bring this is that I think that it's really easy to get into this poem and enjoy it.
Nice.
Slow Dance. More than putting another man on the moon, more than a New Year's resolution of yogurt and yoga, we need the opportunity to dance with really exquisite strangers. A slow dance between the couch and dining room table at the end of the party, while the person we love has gone to bring the car around because it's begun to rain and would break their heart if any part of us got wet. A slow dance to bring the evening home. Two people rocking back and forth like a buoy. Nothing extravagant. A little music, an empty bottle of whiskey. It's a little like cheating. Your head resting on his shoulder, your breath moving up his neck. Your hands along her spine, her hips unfolding like a cotton napkin. And you begin to think about how all the stars in the sky are dead. The my body is talking to your body, slow dance. The unchained melody, stairway to heaven, power chord, slow dance. All my life I've made mistakes, small and cruel. I made my plans. I never arrived. I ate my food. I drank my wine. The slow dance doesn't care. It's all kindness, like children before they turn 3. Like being held in the arms of my brother. The slow dance of siblings. 2 men in the middle of the room. When I dance with him, one of my great loves, he is absolutely human. And when he turns to dip me or I step on his foot because we are both leading, I know that one of us will die first and the other will suffer. The slow dance of what's to come and the slow dance of insomnia, pouring across the floor like bath water. When the woman I'm sleeping with stands naked in the bathroom, brushing her teeth, the slow dance of ritual is being spit into the sink. There is no one to save us because there is no need to be saved. I've hurt you. I've loved you. I've mowed the front yard. When the stranger wearing a sheer white dress covered in a million beads slinks toward me like an oversexed chandelier suddenly come to life, I take her hand in mine. I spin her out and bring her in. This is the almond grove in the dark slow dance. It is what we should be doing right now, scraping for joy, the haiku and honey, the orange and orangutan slow dance.
Nice.
Yes. Very nice.
Such a good, and that's a great example of a poem that I feel like shouldn't turn you off to poetry, right? Like people, these are the poems people should be reading when they're getting introduced to poetry.
Yes, definitely.
You can enter it. It's accessible, and then it's funny, and it's pleasurable, and the language is interesting, and you know, you don't have to have some degree and something
no.
to read it.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And yet it's so well crafted too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's from the book, what is it called again? The
All American Poem by Matthew Dickman. Yes.
Yeah. And I think that was his first book of poetry. Does that sound right to you?
I'm not sure about the chronology, okay. actually.
He doesn't have a lot of books, but
no.
he's definitely one to look up. Mm-hmm. Matthew Dickman.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't know his brother as well, Michael Dickman, but he also has a couple of books out? Or
yes.
Okay.
One is called Flies.
Did you bring...
I did not. Well, actually, I brought for our poetry group next for us all to discuss at our poetry group.
Okay. Flies. So I should let listeners know that, not since you've said that, Tina, since you left the secret
out.
We're all part, plus a couple other people, are part of a group that gets together on a sort of regular basis and just talks about poetry. And we choose poems that befuddle us or usually befuddle us on some level. Or sometimes
or
that
totally.
We just flat out hate.
Right.
And we get together and we talk about poems. And that's kind of what we're doing a little bit tonight, too. Or I guess this is going to air in the morning. So this morning. And if listeners are interested in that group, they can certainly get a hold of us. So let's move on to you, Don, just to get your voice in and hear what you've got in front of you there. What kind of poems do you have?
You mentioned how some people hate poetry, mm-hmm. and I think the poet I'm going to mention right now is a poet I hate.
And
I think this is a poet that if people are exposed to poetry in this fashion, they're gonna think poetry is awful because they might be right on this particular poet. And you know, I understand form and academic poetry and you know, rules and all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think John Ashbery is just awful, just awful. And, I mean, one of the reasons I like poetry is because I am able to read about human feelings that, you know, we all have, but I may not have dug deep enough or didn't have the ability to even come up with those ideas. But I don't believe that there's anything in a John Ashbery poem that means that's going to move anybody. And if that's your introduction to poetry, you're going to hate poetry.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you keep pointing to a poem, so I feel like you have to read this poem too. This is your example of the really bad poetry.
I'm dying
poetry.
To hear it now.
Yeah.
Well, I know it makes me sound like a lowbrow poetry reader, but... this is the poem. This is the second New Yorker that I picked up. He had a John. He's in New Yorker all the time. And, okay, it's called Dangerous Asylum. As famous as a broken disc, thanks for coming all this way. That's why I have to do it, to be a goon that matters into another person's life. You have a lousy voice, but a good tenor. There, I said it. You'll have to quickly get back on the job, brothers. In her transparent hair, she is, well, just a person, Bruce confessed. And that stuff is now getting cold. I'll be there for you. They want to cut them off from other poppy seed cakes. Getting old again. Frustrated Bobby Soxer. Hold that opera. You made the lyrics. You remind me of you. We had been up to Speculator once before. Off you go, then.
Off you go then.
Well, this makes me so pleased in so many levels. Like, Don took a really bold stand there and said that he hates John Ashbery, which I feel like is just wonderful. And then read a poem that, you know, if you understand that poem, you should call. You should call us. We should talk about it.
Maybe this will be next on the group.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand poetry that just turns people off. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm. I really like accessible poems. I like poems that upon first reading, you get some sense of the meaning. Yeah. And as we've discussed before in our group, if I'm reading an anthology and I come across a poem like that, I'll read two lines and then I move on. I don't even give it a chance. The only time I give it a chance is when Don brings it to the poetry group. And then he forces us to talk about it.
We're thinking about, you know, forcing Don out of the group. So if someone's really interested in joining, they should definitely get a hold of us.
Brooke, we're going to turn to you now and ask you to talk about your own experiences with poetry.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe when you started reading it, or perhaps you want to just go straight to reading us something.
Well, I did bring a stack of books just in case, and since you read a really dark poem, Carrie, I feel a little less nervous about doing this. I'm going to read a really dark poem, too.
And I have more dark poems
okay.
I could read.
Okay. This poem is, I find, very dark, and I think people will find it dark as well, and also an amazing poem. So I'm just going to share it with you all. This is by a writer, Linda McCarriston, and the name of her book is Eva Mary. And the poem I'm going to read to you, actually, I should have probably checked this first. I'm not sure how to say the name. I'm sure it's an Irish name.
I wouldn't have any idea.
So it's To Judge Fowling, Dead Long Enough, A Summons. And that's the whole title of the poem. Your Honor, when my mother stood before you with her routine domestic plea, after weeks of waiting for speech to return to her body, with her homemade 40s hairdo, her face purple still under pancake, her jaw off just a little, her holy of holies healing, her breasts wrung, her heart the bursting heart of someone snagged among rocks deep in a shark pool. No, not someone, but a woman there, snagged with her babies, by them, in one of hope's pedestrian brutal turns, when, in the tones of parlors overlooking the harbor, you admonished that, for the sake of the family, the wife must take back the husband to her bed. What you willed not to see before you was a woman risen clean to the surface, a woman who, with one arm flailing, held up with the other her actual burdens of flesh. When you clamped to her leg the chain of justice, you ferried us back down to the law, the black ice eye, the maw, the mako that circles the kitchen table nightly. What did you make of the words she told you, not to have heard her, not to have seen her there? Almost forgivable in ignorance, you were not the fist, the boot, or the blade, but the jaded corrective ear and eye at the limits of her world. Now, I will you to see her as she was, to ride your own words back into light. I call your spirit home again, divesting you of robe and bench, the fine white hand and half-lit Irish eye. Tonight, put on a body in the trailer down the road, where your father, when he can't get it up, makes love to your mother with a rifle. Let your name be Eva Mary. Let your hour of birth be dawn. Yet let your life be long and common, and your flesh endure. This whole book is a tale of Linda McCarriston's youth, childhood, and her parents, her mother and her father. And all of the poems are heart-wrenching like that and are about her experience. And I find it to be a beautiful book and one well worth reading, but also one that is very difficult to read. So look for it if you dare. But I'm really sad to say that we're about out of time. We actually have to wrap it up right now. We didn't get anywhere near to all that I was hoping we could talk about. So maybe we're going to have to do another poetry show.
Yes.
Thank you, Tina, Dawn, Carrie, for co-hosting with me, and all of you for coming in and talking about poetry. You've been listening to The Library Show. April is National Poetry Month. Go out and read poetry.